What? We're going to talk about books.
Hey, books.
Books. Books.
Yay.
Books. I'm your host, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello. With me always, Hannah.
Just sliding all the buttons around. Twisting knobs. Making people's voices sound echoey.
Echoey. Leah.
Hi.
And our very special guest, Carrie.
Hello.
I mean, Leah's a special guest, too.
I'm more special.
Okay. Carrie came all the way over here from Once Upon a Story Time.
It was exactly. A long journey.
It was a long journey.
Treacherous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was some plot points that you had to dodge and some evil witches. And,
yeah. It was rough, man.
It was super, super rough. Mm-hmm. See, Leah just came over here from like 20 feet away.
You know, I wouldn't even trade. I kind of like the adventure.
There we go.
Yeah.
And we're going to be talking fairy tales today. This is a special crossover episode with Once Upon a Story Time.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about fairy tales.
Hey. We've got some fairy tales.
We've got some fairy tales.
Fairy tales and fairy tale tropes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some common themes that come up a lot.
Excited about it.
Okay. I guess like one of the first things to mention is that sort of would kick off this whole discussion is that fairy tales were used to teach children about what to expect of themselves and of society. And so a lot of the tropes that we're going to talk about tie into the values that we see at different points in time.
Okay.
Well, that's cool.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
So I was trying to do some of the research and I couldn't really find, like...
Oh, I didn't do any research.
I'm sorry. I'm going to lean on you a lot for this because I was trying and I just was having a really hard time finding most of it. They talked about it in the context of, like, folklore and it being like, well, it's not like a legend because legends are kind of based in fact. Or, like, they have basis in historical events. And then, like, fables, which are, like, moral tales. And, and I was like, well, that's not really helpful. I just want to know about fairy tales. But if you type in fairy tale, it was like...
Folklore and fairy tales have a lot of overlap.
Right.
Fairy tales are, I at least, and this is not by any means official, and it's not anything I've read anywhere, it's just like my own brain thinking. Fairy tales are the kinds of stories that get retold a lot under different titles.
Okay.
Folklore, I feel, is a little bit more regionally specific.
Yeah.
With fairy tales, you see the same story from France, from Africa, from South America, just retold with slightly different characters. And folklore, I mean, Baba Yaga is very regionally specific. You don't see many.
Gotcha.
You don't see any.
At least classic.
Classic Baba Yaga, yep. And at least in my mind, that's the difference, is that folklore is very specifically regionally tied, and fairy tales are a little bit more ubiquitous.
Yeah. I feel like fairy tales is also a catch-all term.
Yes.
Like, probably had a origin somewhere being like, this is what fairy tales are, and then over time, it just became any story with a lesson that wasn't specifically a fable or a legend.
Yeah.
Like... Right. It's just kind of a...
I mean, we can go to, like, the actual words fairy tales as it starts with fairies.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the first fairy tales, were the ones about fairies and fae.
Yeah. But then you've got, like, is it Germanic? Is it Celtic?
Exactly.
Is it Welsh?
Exactly.
Is it...
There's definitely been a lot of overlap in the use of the terms over the years, and that muddies things even further.
Yep.
You might think that my definition makes sense, but then you're reading this book of... let's say fairy tales, and all of a sudden, well, this is very regionally specific, Carrie, like, because there are books of, like, Ukrainian fairy tales. I do a lot of research for my podcast, and so I, like, read through tons of these collections, and there are quite a few regional, air quotes, regional fairy tales collections. So there's overlap there.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's kind of an umbrella catch-all term, and it encompasses a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And depending on who you ask.
Oh, yeah.
Right. For sure. we can tell you what fairy tales are.
Right.
And then you can go downstairs to the store and ask like six other people and you'll get six other answers.
Yeah.
Exactly. True.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the general idea behind all of these is that there's a basis in oral storytelling. So you're telling these stories aloud a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And they are designed to teach something in some way, whether it's about how to interact with the world, what to expect from the world, where things came from, they're meant to explain.
Mm-hmm. Even stuff as mundane as just like, stay out of the forest.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. Don't go near the river.
It's dangerous. Don't travel alone.
Beware of weird old ladies in cottages in the woods.
It's okay to be silly sometimes.
It's okay to be silly sometimes.
Hey. The three sillies. Anyway.
Don't put on the fairy shoes.
If you find a strange pair of shoes in the woods, that's a very common one.
Oh, okay.
If you find a strange pair of shoes in the woods, don't put them on.
Except they always put them on.
They always put them on.
They always put them on.
Well, how would you learn not to if someone didn't provide the cautionary example?
Exactly.
That's the whole point of the story,
I suppose. I guess I'm looking at this from the viewpoint of an adult, because like, if I was in the woods
like actually,
and there was just a pair of shoes, I'd be like, someone got murdered and I shouldn't touch those. And then I would just leave.
I mean, that is very valid.
That's true. I am also an adult person who has those kinds of thoughts, and right, a child but, might but not honestly, think the same way.
You probably are not the first adult person to have a thought like that, and that's why these stories exist, is like, all right, kids, don't put on the dead person's shoes.
Right, like, don't don't wear shoes from
that
dead
are laying
people.
Out in the right. forest that might
you don't know who they belong to. You don't know who's going to be pissed that you took their shoes.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Exactly.
Like, you know.
Just and don't take people, don't take things that don't, if you, like, if you don't know who the owner is.
Yeah, don't, if it doesn't belong to you, don't take it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just laying in the middle of the woods, maybe don't take it.
Yeah. Maybe don't take it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Don't eat strange food that you find in the middle of the woods.
Ooh, yeah, the food one is a big one.
I don't know. I would also.
I mean, generally, the woods are viewed as a very, like, dangerous place to be in fairy tales. That is a big trope, since we'll circle back here, is the woods are dangerous.
Right.
And if you think
again,
I'm an
adult, and so I feel like I have a different perspective, because I understand, like, a child walking through the woods, you find a beautiful table filled with delicious looking food. You're a child and you're like, man, I really want to eat that. As an adult, I walk through the woods and I find a beautiful table set out with tons of different beautiful looking, delicious looking foods. I would be like, this is really weird. First of all, is there a wedding?
Is, like, what is happening?
Is this a movie shoot? Am I on the set of something?
Did I walk in? What did I walk into?
Where did this come from? I've been hiking for 4 hours.
Is applying far too much logic to our fairy tales. Should be Hannah.
I feel like this is just you and me, though, on Once Upon a Story Time, is because I'm just always on
this. Is our sidebar on Once Upon a Story Time.
The listeners never get to hear this. I'm just over here going, why are you selling your children?
Literally, she has yelled that multiple times, because it does come up. I mean, to circle back once again to tropes. The things that come up are stuff that are difficult for families to talk about. So the selling of children when times get tough is a thing that happens. I want to drop an F-bomb. It sucks. Mm-hmm. But it is a really hard thing that families have had to grapple with over the centuries. Mm-hmm. And so that comes up in stories in various ways, whether the family's really sad about it, or whether the family's like, oh my god, finally, like, they can get rid of these children. Like,
yeah. Or the trope of, on the similar vein, like Hop on My Thumb, where it's just, we take our children to the woods and we leave them. Hansel and Gretel, we take them into the woods and we
leave
them.
Not even selling them, because if you just leave them, then you don't really know what happened to them. Like, you can kind of imagine in your, like, I think this actually came up in the story where the mom was just imagining that the children were all fine, and that she could live with that version of how it went when she left her children alone in the woods.
And Hop on My Thumb, she was like, I hope they got eaten quickly.
Okay, I remember now, But, like, that is not, like, these stories are meant to prepare kids for the grim realities of living as a serf.
a peasant,
or whatever. You know? Yeah, a lot of the tropes are really hard to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was especially
some of the really old fairy tales and stuff.
There's a lot of filtering that had to happen for every episode of Once Upon a Story Time.
Right.
I read through a lot of stories saying, oh, he beats his wife and that's how the problem gets solved.
Oh,
hard pass.
Yeah.
Like,
Taming of the Shrew, anyone?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, these stories, especially the older ones, are very much reflections of the values that were held by society at that time. which is why we run into a lot of the problematic classics.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That are still on shelves today.
Right.
Yeah. Because they're just a reflection of the society they were written in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Back when nobility was nobility and nobody had rights. Nobody.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yep. Nobody. Not even the nobility, really.
Really, really. Yeah. Right.
Everyone was kind of stuck in one way or another.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some of the best known... Let's go over some of the best known fairy tales and maybe talk about the tropes that we've seen.
Okay.
What are some that jump to mind?
Mostly, like, Snow White or...
Snow White, the purity trope.
Yep.
Oh, that's a big one, too. Yeah. Ooh, her skin was so fair.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that the fact that Snow White was a brunette is unusual. Usually the princesses are very blonde.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Blonde and fair and rosy-cheeked. At least a lot of the stories that I was reading that are in the public domain because they were published.
But I wonder if that also has something to do with where Snow White originated.
Oh, perhaps that might.
Because I don't think it was a Danish... I don't think Snow White was a Danish fairy tale.
It was European.
I think it was European, but I feel like it was somewhere where dark hair is a little more accepted.
Might be French, but either way, it is very much a reflection of the purity thing that comes up a lot, especially when there are princesses in the story.
Right.
There might be one or two, like, not nice princesses who are really, like... poorly behaved. This is also usually reflected in their physical appearance. They tend to be ugly or overweight, or their feet are very big and don't fit in Cinderella's shoes. Yeah. You know, the purity trope is very much women should look a certain way, and if they look a certain way, that means they are good.
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We see that a lot.
That comes up a lot. And that's a hard one to avoid, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, because that leads directly into like the old witch, because they're always ugly.
Oof.
Like,
yeah. And that, and that has a lot of,
even too.
The old witch crone thing has a lot of really bad, like, anti-Semitism tropes attached to it.
Yes.
Which are really gross. Same with, like, the goblins and things like that that we see in not all fairy tales, but a lot of them. Just the greedy, hunched, crooked-nosed, anytime I read one of those in a story, I'm like... Oh, bud.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's very much the belief that if your actions are reflected in your appearance.
Right.
I was reading one article that stood out to me. It was like the mothers, like in a lot of fairy tales. So you're either the good absentee mother who died, or you're an evil stepmother.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yes. My last story the last story that I read had a good mother in it, but she was absent for most of the story
because she got turned into a bird.
It was honestly it was a good thing she got turned into a bird.
It was.
Alternative would not have been nice.
Right. Yeah. I heard that one.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah.
But she was absent for most of the story, and I think that was why she got to be a good character,
right? Yes,
rather than an evil character.
Yep.
The disinterested fathers and the absent mothers or wicked mothers are like a huge trope, and that's one that I just don't get totally. I mean, I know that nobility was different and stuff back in the days.
Yeah, the expectations of parenting for the upper class were very minimal.
Yeah.
You'd outsource that to your wet nurse or whoever.
Yeah.
But I think that the parenting trope might also have a little bit to do with, like, hooking kids into the story, because a lot of the time your parents are kind of villainous. Like, that's your perspective as a child. They're always denying you things. No. They're not giving you enough attention. They're not looking at you, like, they're not
punishing
looking
you.
They're punishing you for things. They're not looking at the things you've done.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of kids can empathize with that. perspective.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of kids also just, even if their step-parents are very nice people, a lot of kids really do just are anti-step-parent. You know, it's replacing my mom, replacing my dad, even if that's not the intent. Sometimes it is, but even if it's not, it's a hard thing.
That's true even today, but even, like, especially back when a lot of these stories were being written, the fact that you're, like, it's not your birth parent, regardless of the circumstances of how you got a step-parent, like, there's a whole lot of religious baggage there.
Right. Yeah. I think I'd have to, like, no, we've talked about it before, but my absolute favorite fairy tale of all times is Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, yeah.
But I also, the trope in Beauty and the Beast is, especially the original story, to me, is a little squicky with the, like, just the constant badgering.
Stockholm syndrome.
The, like, ask her to marry you enough times and eventually she's gonna, like,
persistence
is key.
As a virtue.
Right. And the whole, like, it's a fairy tale. It's about love. I get it.
Yeah.
Quote, love.
Love,
quote,
air quote. Quotes.
but, like, the whole idea that love can make a mean person not a mean person, or a bad person not a bad person.
Right. Or a monster not a monster, basically.
Yeah. It is one of those that's always kind of like,
it's a beautiful story.
It's a beautiful story.
But taking it as a lesson about relationships is not the thing to do. And honestly, that is the case with a lot of the older fairy tales that we see, is that they're beautiful, fun, interesting, sometimes spooky, creepy stories.
Mm-hmm. And I always read Beauty and the Beast as a, because during that time, arranged marriages and things like that were super, super popular. Yes. So I always read it as a kind of
learning to tolerate.
Yeah, like, you might be really unhappy in this situation, but you're stuck in it. So you need to learn to find the silver linings, and eventually two people living together for a long enough time will find common ground, and, like, that's a great thing.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, but the fact is that that lesson is no longer really relevant.
It's not. Right. And now we've got, you know, big tropes all over and reading about, like, the enemies to lovers, but it's, like, super toxic enemies to lovers. I've read a lot of, like, current inspired by Beauty and the Beast kind of stories, and I'm like, oh, that's all bad. That's just excusing toxicity, my friends. That's forgiving abusers. There's a healthy dose
of Stockholm syndrome in Beauty and the Beast.
I mean, the original one isn't so bad as, like, the Disney adaptations.
Okay. I will admit that I actually don't remember reading the original.
So the original one, Beast actually treats, like, the prince actually treats her very well.
Okay.
But he does every night at dinner ask her to marry him. No. And she says no every night. And like, she considers him, like, a friend.
Okay.
Because he treats her very well, but not, like, romantically.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when he ends up getting, like, almost killed, then she realizes, oh no, I like this monster. It's weird. So it's the original story is a little less Stockholm-y.
Yeah.
Because it also has, like, that trope where, because, like, Belle is, like, the youngest of her siblings, too.
Yep.
And so there's always that one where it's, like, the youngest kid is always the nicest one. And the heroine of the universe.
And in the original, and, like, I believe her sisters are really mean, too.
Yeah,
like, her sisters are really awful to her all the time.
I would believe that. To create a contrast between the heroine or hero and their siblings are usually pretty terrible. And I don't know if that's just a carryover of how kids view their siblings a lot of time. I don't know if Sarah and Leah here. We can talk about siblings. Talk a little bit about the sibling relationship.
Yeah, you guys are our expert on sibling relationships.
Yes.
All of my siblings are too old for me to have actual sibling relationships.
And I guess it comes with, like, having older siblings too, because, like, Leah and I and our brother are all, like, within a year and a half of each other.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we were almost, like, triplets running around instead of, like, a much more closer relationship than I think he was.
So
a few
when
years
you three
older.
Were growing up, did each of you kind of, like, view yourselves as, like, the hero and one of the others as maybe, like, your sidekick or the villain? Was there some, like,
I feel like we had, like, a
a weird dynamic where I don't remember ever like being like antagonistic towards my siblings.
Okay.
Like,
did you ever feel like
your siblings were antagonistic toward you?
I mean, all kids
find right? Right? I mean, yeah. Right? That's kind of what I'm trying to get at. Know, is that, like, like the siblings tend to view each other a little bit, like at least at certain ages.
Yeah, definitely.
There is a little bit of rivalry. Yeah.
Everybody's, you know, easier on, you know, Farrell because he's a boy or whatever.
Yeah.
He doesn't, I don't know.
It was, like, always because like our two older
boys and girls, that's another
thing. And like because we had our two older brothers who were like older and like out of the house, it seemed more like, I don't know, we were like, us kids were just like left to our own devices. We were like all the baby where nobody paid attention to us because they were, you know, had to like deal with the older brothers and stuff.
And stuff like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Feral children.
I don't know, like, I grew up with, like, my cousins being closer in age to me, and, like, but we didn't live together, so we didn't have that kind of dynamic, so we were always buddies, because
it was, like... I was the middle child between my brother and sister, who were each about 2 years from me in age. There was definitely a sibling rivalry there. Right. Like, I don't think that they're listening, but in case they are, I love you both.
Caveat. Love you, fam.
Love you both.
But, but I definitely, like, my little sister hung around too much, and she was clingy, and she kept copying me.
Right.
And my older brother was a bully, and so I at least, like, when I, like, there would be times when we'd get along great, we would be a team, and there are stories that reflect that, where the siblings, like, there's usually one that kind of leads the gang, but where they all kind of gang together, and they all get along fairly well. But there were definitely moments where my brother and I butted heads, and where I was sick to death of my sister, and that also definitely gets reflected.
They're just about life.
With, like I said, a reflection of kind of what kids might be able to expect as they grow up, but told in a way that's a little bit more
palatable.
Captivating.
Yeah.
Palatable, maybe. I don't know. Some of these stories that I read. Not so palatable to me, but, you know, I am not the intended readership either. So.
Well, you know, adults read into things.
Yes.
We have more understanding of the world, so there's a lot of things that we hear that we're like, oh, whoa.
That kids don't even pick up on.
And they're just, they're like, I don't know what that means.
Right?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. That's just a fun story about some magic shoes. That's what that is.
Yeah.
But what about you, Leah? Do you have favorite fairy tales?
Favorite fairy tales. Beauty and the Beast and Snow White were always trying to think of any of the other fairy tales that I know of. Little Mermaid.
I was just thinking about Little Mermaid.
There's so much to unpack in
lot to unpack in the Little Mermaid.
From Hans Christian Andersen specifically.
The Hans Christian Andersen one is so sad.
It was so sad.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. The Little Mermaid. That one, I mean, I think that's just a reflection of not...
I think that it's more of a reflection on Hans Christian Andersen than society. This is all just stuff I've read online.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know.
Yeah,
there's we're here to talk about it. There's a lot of literary criticism. Criticism? Not criticism, but...
Commentary
about The Little Mermaid being basically a love letter to Hans Christian Andersen's gentleman who he was madly in love with, who he couldn't be with because of the times.
Yep.
And so the whole thing was like that story, more or less.
That would make sense. Why it was so sad.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So it was that versus actually like a poignant metaphor on the culture.
That would make actually a lot more sense.
So like, and I believe that stemmed from like diary entries that they found from him and things like that. Like, it was not really a fairy tale per se as so much as like a personal metaphor.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Interesting. That is very interesting. Well, that actually makes me think of the guy that did the score for Beauty and the Beast, the Disney version. Or I don't know if he did even the score.
The new one? The new one uses a lot of this.
I mean,
the animated.
The animated.
Thank you, guys. Yes. Not the one with Emma Watson.
Yes,
the other one.
The other one, yeah. And now I can't even remember. I'm assuming, I think it was the guy that did the score for it or whatever, but it was like the storyboard of it was because he was a gay man that was dying of AIDS while he was writing it. And like his interpretation of it is like two outcasts coming together in that version.
Because she's being ostracized by her village.
Yeah.
And so then she goes and finds a like-minded person.
There's just a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, anyway, so yeah.
That happens in, like, honestly, the oral storytelling basis that all this comes from. That happens so much. People flavoring the story with a little bit of their own experiences. So that, I think, is just natural with storytelling.
That's the reason, too, why, like, two retellings of the same fairy tale are never going to be the same.
Exactly.
You know, it's always going to be different, whether it's actual content wise or like tonal wise or like whatever.
Yep.
Everything's different.
That actually makes me there's something that I kind of wanted to talk about. I don't know who has read Spinning Silver.
I have not. I've heard of it.
So I own it. It's on my bookshelf. I look at it constantly.
That's close, Hannah, but I have read it twice since I've owned it, possibly three times. I can't remember. It doesn't really matter. Because the thing I want to talk about is because when I picked it up and read it the first time, it was so familiar to me. But it also was so very different to me. So I'm like, I feel like I recognized the fairy tales that it was about, but I don't know what the fairy tales were. Like, it's just...
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I just like, the first time I read it, I just was like, I know this story, but it's also completely new.
Interesting.
Like, and it was so good. And so anyways, that's just like not knowing the actual fairy tales, but like
recognizing the patterns and tropes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
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 Well, like you said, it is just repeated throughout.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like, even if you can't remember the exact name of the fairy tale that you've heard this specific trope from, there's a good chance that you've heard it at some point.
Yeah.
Like whether it's from a movie or a song or a play or an actual
rhyme.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Like it's ingrained in human culture. These stories at this point.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I just liked.
The author on that was Naomi Novik, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Just making sure I was remembering the right book.
Yep.
Because I know, in that one especially, like, 3 is, like, a really important number in it, which is also a pretty common thing for tropes. Like,
there are 2 magical fairy tale numbers, and it's 3 and 7.
Okay.
Yeah. They come up a whole lot. I don't know if it's because they are pretty low prime numbers.
Right,
I don't know.
There's a lot of superstition.
Right? There is a lot of superstition around numbers 3 and 7. And 11 and 13. And all those are probably the 4 most common numbers in numbers of children, numbers of stops that a person makes on their story, numbers of, you know, whenever there's a number needed, it's probably going to be one of those 4.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because she's the daughter of a moneylender in the story, and then her dad is too nice to go out and collect the money back.
Oh, no.
So she's like, okay, this isn't happening. And so she goes out to collect all the money, and then she ends up drawing the attention of a fairy who wants her to turn silver into gold. So then she takes some of his silver coins, sells them to a jeweler who makes them into, like, a ring, and then makes 3 gold pieces off of it, and she gives it back, and she does that 3 times. So then he steals her away to the fairy kingdom, because once she's demonstrated it thrice that she can do the thing, now she is going to turn all of his silver into gold.
Oh no. You gotta be really specific with the fae, man. You gotta be so
Ooh, that's like Rumpelstiltskin.
I know,
but also a little bit of like the cobbler,
a little bit
with his shoes, like
meeting up overnight each night.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because then the girl that she takes in as, like, her kind of protege when she has to go to town to change the silver or whatever, she's got two brothers that are, like, useless.
As siblings often are in fairy tales. Yeah. Useless brothers. It was, at least they didn't call them simple.
No, right. That's very common terminology in fairy tales, is the people who are simple.
But I did like the fact that at the end of it, like, the two brothers did, like, start this weird thing where the three siblings were on a rivalry, but that as more she got, like, taught by, now I can't remember any of their names, the main character, and they became, like, more of a unit. She's like, I'm not supporting you guys. You have to, like, pull your weight. Like, okay.
I like that. That's, yeah.
Love growth.
I mean, yeah.
We love character growth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very good.
Mm-hmm. So. We're very happy about here.
And yes. I like seeing tropes that, like, break the mold a little bit. Yes. Like, I love fractured fairy tales for that reason.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love things that start at a... I'm looking at Leah here. I
like stories that start in a familiar place or keep referring back to familiar tropes and patterns, but I love seeing when the author is a little bit more creative.
Right.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Well, and it's so nice, too, to see modern takes on classic tropes.
Oh, yes.
Because it gives an opportunity to grow those situations into something different.
Yes. Yeah.
It doesn't always have to end the same way. We can end things differently.
Yes. I'm gonna take us away from books for just a moment. Mm-hmm. I know that this is the book podcast. But I saw a musical recently that kind of ties into what we're talking about. Pirates of Penzance.
It was put on the Pirates of Penzance.
I actually don't love the story of Pirates of Penzance. It's a little bit problematic,
That's fair. You know what? I will give that to you. Yeah. I like the musical.
That is fair. The music is a lot of fun. But the version that I saw recently was put on by, I think it's called the Mid-Columbia
Musical Theater.
Yep, that was them. They did it here in the Uptown, and it was a gender-bent version.
Ooh.
So the daughters were actually all played by mask-presenting actors. All the pirates were played by femme-presenting actors.
I love that.
And so it was just a flip on the traditional.
It was
hilarious. They did a great job.
I
don't know if it's gonna still be running when this episode airs.
Probably not. This will be sometime,
but it's also not the first show that I've seen from them. It won't be the last. I'm gonna do a little plug for them here.
I need to start going to see their shows, because I've never seeing the Mid-Columbia Musical Theater productions.
Yeah, they do a great job.
Mm-hmm. They all look great.
Yeah. We should all start going to the theater together.
Yes.
To the theater.
I wasn't the one that brought up musicals this time.
It was me!
I'll bring them up whenever you want. I will be happy to. I know this is a book podcast, but it just kind of tied into what we were talking about with these modern takes on those classic stories.
Absolutely. You can read scripts.
True.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Who would want to?
Well,
not the same.
Well, then I can bring up Pillow Man again for the second time on this podcast.
Perfect. Pillow Man. I'm not familiar, actually.
Oh god, it's a messed upsetting. Up. It's upsetting, but it's also basically the main character is taken in and for questioning about murders that are happening that seem to follow the plot lines of his stories that he's written. And it turns out to be that his brother, who is mentally handicapped, has been committing these murders based on his books. The thing about it at the end is that this guy has written messed up books, and that's why murders happen. But one of his stories was a fairy tale, and he also reenacted that one where he kidnapped a little girl and they just had three pigs out in the middle of the forest and they were, like, dancing around having a tea party. And that's where they caught him.
I don't even know how to respond.
Yeah, I know. That show was...
Because not only is it... Because it's, like, one of the most truly, like... Stage plays don't dive into, like, that genre of stuff. Typically, I've never seen, like, a horror-driven, like, stage play, if that makes sense.
Like, Abby, well, there's some Shakespeare you should see.
Okay. But so it's because it's, like, it's also like set in a dystopian like 1984 type situation.
Okay. Yeah.
Police are like interrogating him about these murders and I don't know. It's just, it's like everything about it is upsetting.
Yeah.
But it's also an incredibly, I don't know. Yeah. They did a performance of it when I was in college at CBC.
Okay.
And it was so good.
Yeah. And it's one of the, and it's one of my favorite kinds of plays, which is the single room play.
Okay.
So it's just him and his cell.
Oh my God.
And people coming in and out and talking to him and stuff like that. Like,
I do love those. I
starred in a play quite like that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. It was called While the Lights Were Out. Oh. It was this, well, I played a woman who was bedridden. And so the whole one act play was shot in her bedroom.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I was the only one that was on stage at all the whole time.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Phone conversations were a lot of it. It's about this old lady who's paranoid that someone's going to come kill her. Because she got this creepy phone call in the middle of the night. And so she calls the police. She calls all sorts of people. And nobody takes her seriously because she's sort of like neurotic and high strung. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, she gets murdered.
Oh, we did one when I was in high school called Why Do We Laugh? And it was similar in that it was like technically it's a one room play because the two main characters are just sitting and reminiscing about their life. But it does scene changes where like they stay on stage, but the lights dim and then the lights come up on a different part of the stage and people react their memories.
Yeah.
And then like, so that scene like that changes sort of a lot, but they all they constantly stay.
Yeah. Now that we've derailed this podcast. Now that we have
derailed thoroughly.
I mean... plays, also
media.
Yeah. Also fairy, it's not just books. Fairy tales have been picked up in all forms of media.
That's true. We were talking about movies.
And there are tropes that you see in fairy tales that almost all forms of like visual media
have picked up on.
Totally. Whether they're fairy tales specifically or not, the tropes are in those.
Right.
Yes. Because I feel like a lot of fairy tale tropes are just baked into all forms of modern storytelling.
Well,
I think they're so old.
There are story tropes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
For sure.
I don't know if fairy tales were... I mean, I guess oral storytelling would be where they came from first.
I mean, true.
Yeah.
True.
That is the oldest form of storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The OG,
the OG storytellers are the ones that sit around the campfires.
That makes me think scary stories to tell in the dark are fairy tales.
Yeah.
Technically, because they're supposed to be told orally.
Yeah. I mean, one could argue whether they're folklore.
Oh, I guess, folklore.
There's a lot of, like we said earlier, there's a lot of overlap. True. And that is a thing I think that could be argued ad nauseam.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
It has been, too. I think campfire stories maybe have their own little subtag.
That's
under.
True,
maybe.
I feel like it's like oral traditions, and then it's like fairy tales, campfire stories.
Fables.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't think we've heard your favorite, Carrie.
My favorite? You know, I didn't even really think about it.
You asked, and then
I asked everybody else, and then I didn't think about it. I was going to say Little Mermaid, because I grew up watching the Disney version as a kid, and that was my favorite as a kid. I always really liked Hansel and Gretel, though.
I love Hansel and Gretel.
I don't know why. I don't know if it was, like, the independence and ingenuity of children who could figure out, A, how to get back out of the woods. Mm-hmm. All right, leave a trail. That's smart. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take that and remember it for my own. As a child, I remembered that for my own.
I also remembered as a child that, like, you shouldn't use
breadcrumbs.
You have to use rocks or twigs or something.
Something that will stay.
That you can stay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I also learned that you can't mark trees because fairies will just mark all the trees.
Oh, see, I don't care about that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't remember what fairy tale that was from, but I remember, I think it was from one of the, like, the leprechaun lores where the guy was trying to keep like figure out where the leprechaun was hiding his gold, and so he like marked the trees on the path, and then the leprechaun went back and marked all the trees in the forest with the same markings so that like he couldn't find his pot of gold. I think that's what it was.
I was also a big fan of Little Red Riding Hood because I played Little Red in a musical when I was a kid. I was in Into the Woods. I know, I was a pudgy little kid, and so I got to, like, eat all the sweets at the start of the play, and it was actually really fun. I had a great time. But because of that, Little Red is always sort of stuck in my... Mm-hmm. And that one ties into the purity thing again.
And And not trusting strangers.
Not trusting strangers.
Always listening to your parents. Go listen straight to your grandparents' house.
Follow the path in the woods, y'all.
Stay on the path.
You can just stay on the path. Admire the flowers from the path. You don't have to, like...
Also, I feel like there's something there, too, about... It probably plays in... I'm going to read into this probably way
Please
too much.
Do. Please do.
It probably plays into a lot of, like, religious tropes with the wolf taking on the grandmother's spot. Like, don't always trust your family if you think there's something wrong.
Oh, kind of thing. Yeah.
I would almost liken that with, like, the old Christian and Catholicism tropes of, like, demon possession and things like that.
Okay, I could totally see that. Yeah.
Especially since grandma was a little old lady living in the woods all by herself.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's prime real estate for that trope.
That totally is. Ooh. I will say that I think that partly why I liked the Little Red Riding Hood story the most is because in Into the Woods, Little Red becomes this badass. Sorry, please bleep that.
I will. You don't have to apologize. I cut them out.
But I'm not nearly as
worried about it.
Into the Woods, she gets out of the wolf's stomach and she turns into this little badass who carries a dagger around and wears the wolf's skin, like, as a cape.
Amazing.
And so I think I like that fractured version of Little Red a little bit better, where she turns into, like, she reclaims the story a little bit.
There's also something in Little Red Riding Hood about, like, the male savior trope with the huntsman.
The male savior trope, the virginity trope. I can't not mention Little Red without mentioning, like, the whole menstruation theme there as part of the purity thing.
And the wolf eating her up kind of thing.
We'll stop there. But, like, it is very much, there are definitely sexual tones to that story.
There's a sexual moral lesson there. To a lot of fairy tales, though, which, again,
I mean,
different times, different places, children
behaviors had to be policed and moral and follow certain guidelines.
Yep. Purity culture, man.
Yeah, and if you want to teach kids about it without actually having the really hard talks about, like, sex,
yep,
then a fairy tale is a very easy way to tell your daughter to stay away from men, especially if she's wearing red.
Yeah.
Yum.
Yeah.
Yum.
Yeah. That was a heavy topic.
Sorry. My bad.
I was just going to talk about the male savior trope, but you had to, like,
I'm so sorry. We started talking about genders and it was...
It's fair.
Yeah.
It's fair. It is an actual trope.
It is an actual trope.
You can find it in a ton of fairy tales.
It just sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it exists.
I like that we are currently living, I mean, like, we still have a lot of purity culture in our current society.
Yes.
For sure. But I love that we are living in the modern age where those conversations can be had a little more candidly.
Exactly.
People are a lot less afraid of having those conversations, even with children.
Yep.
You know, there's a age-appropriate ways to have those conversations.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We know that. Now we can just be like, hey, bud, don't go walking in the woods with strange people. They're gonna murder you.
Yeah.
Don't have to talk about the monsters that live in the woods. We can just be like, no, they'll just wear your skin.
They're people. You know, maybe we don't have...
Maybe we can have a Hannah.
Don't a happy medium, Hannah.
Don't let me talk to your children about stranger danger. Yeah, is what I'm saying.
Have Hannah talk about it.
Unless you are ready for the consequences.
I've spent too long studying serial killers. I can't have that conversation with your kids. That's why you should have it yourself. Because if they're like, "Why don't my parents want me to talk to strangers?" I'm going to be like, "Because they'll turn you into a lampshade, buddy." Oh boy, let's talk about Jeffrey Dahmer.
Well, even for, like, even for those difficult lessons from stories, these fairy tales and these stories can be a really great launching point for discussions about that sort of thing.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And kids do respond better to imagery yeah. and imagination, then like
it can prompt questions, especially if you're stopping to make time for those conversations as you tell the story.
Yeah,
that is a really like I want to pull out facts about like how much storytelling and reading to kids affects their brain development.
Oh yeah,
but it is huge.
It's huge.
And a big part of that is making sure that they are interacting with the story, and so asking questions along the way, having those talks really makes the difference.
It's one of those things that I see a lot. I have a lot of friends that have kids. I don't have kids myself, but I have a lot of friends who have kids who are raising small children. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of conversations we have constantly about being okay with your kids interrupting the movie, being okay with your kids interrupting the book, being okay with your kids interrupting the story that's happening, because engaging them in those questions and letting them ask and answering them is super so much important. More valuable. It's so important to let them do that.
Yep. Don't make them hold their questions till the end. They won't remember them.
Yeah.
It won't be relevant.
You're watching a movie on Netflix. Just pause it.
Just pause the movie. Right.
Just pause it for a second and be seriously. Like, oh, let's talk about it, bud.
Take the time. Show that you value what they're thinking and what their questions are.
That's a really great question, bud. What do you think?
Right? They're more likely to come to you with questions if you show that you're willing to take the time to answer them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Kids. Lovely.
I don't know, like that. Fairy tale tropes. Letting kids ask questions about fairy tale tropes is important. That was the
that was the tangent there.
That was the tangent there.
Yeah.
Bullet point that one. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that, I mean, unless you have anything else you would like to add.
I mean, I could keep going, but
I would love to keep going also.
I feel like we could talk about this for literally hours.
We could just sit here and chat.
Yeah.
It would be totally doable. Absolutely. 100%.
Poor Hannah would have to edit all of it.
Yes.
She would, though.
I would happily do it, because this is fun.
Yeah.
This isn't pulling teeth, so. Yeah. I actually really love getting to go back and edit the episodes, especially fun episodes like this.
Yeah.
Because I get to re-listen to everything fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to listen to myself talk, which I hate, but
I mean, I feel like I've done a lot of the talking on this episode.
That's fair.
Yeah, I leaned heavily on you, because like, I have a list of some fairy tale tropes that I found in a few articles or whatever, but like,
were there any that we haven't touched on?
I think we did a fair amount of them. We didn't do like simple acts of kindness or like always like
always rewarded
or rewarded at the end or whatever.
Yeah,
like yeah,
there's a big sense of karma in a lot of fairy tales. That good behavior and kindness will come back twofold, tenfold, you will benefit from your goodness.
Right.
Whereas there is a big sense of, oh, well, if you do a bad thing, you're going to have some consequences, right. Even if it's not immediate.
Right.
The universe is going to know.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to get you.
They're going to get you. Yeah, that is a very common, your actions coming back to pay you for them.
Right.
Yeah. Virtue.
Yes.
Yeah.
Virtue.
Karma. Mm-hmm. We talked about the enchanted forest, like stay out of the forest and stuff.
Yeah.
I think commoner becoming royalty, but that kind of leads into like being like, if you're a nice person, and
I guess you get married to a prince and happily ever after. I don't know.
There are quite a few stories where the commoner hero gets elevated to nobility. A lot of the time this happens because I will say this from the ones I've read, it usually only happens to male protagonists. Mm-hmm. Women don't often get lifted up out of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually happens through marriage, because they become some hero and they get to marry the princess at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That is very common, as part of the reward of being a good person is you get to marry the princess.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or the commoner who ends up being secretly the child of a noble.
The king's son got, I don't remember which story this is,
kidnapped.
It might have been the one, honestly, that we just did.
It was.
Yep. I mean, that was one of them. The king's son got shipped away and then was realized to be the king's son later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Years and years ago.
You know, but it was because he was such a good person.
Yes.
And, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
the, it was not something that actually happened very much, as far as I am aware, was the shifting of classes from commoner
to there was plenty of instances, though, of like illegitimate children where the actual heirs of the house died, and so they go and they find one of the illegitimate children
and they would manage to inherit.
I'm
trying to think of like also like the ones where they like somehow like trick the bad guy into like getting like all their money, you know, like isn't that the thing with like Jack and the Beanstalk, where he doesn't he like trick the giant and then he ends up with a bunch of gold or something? Or
I mean, like, cleverness being rewarded, like
cleverness gets rewarded. Villains are also often cast as pretty stupid. There's one or two super smart like advisor characters who are more evil and sort of like I think of them as like the Jafar villain. But a lot of the time, especially if it's a giant or an ogre or someone who is of larger stature, this is a trope again, larger stature people tend to be cast as dumb.
And also like villains being portrayed as stupid enough to be tricked by a small child. Whereas, you know, the king would never be tricked by the small child, but the evil king would be. Like, the good king is smart and wise and kind, but like the evil king is stupid.
You know, maybe that's what makes him evil,
right?
Or is he, you know,
I mean, some of the most evil people on the planet right now are very stupid, so
We don't need to get into moral judgments of specific people here on the podcast.
Do you remember? Do you remember season one of Word Warren where I wouldn't shut up about political topics?
This is a throwback.
This is a throwback. I will now shut up.
But the villains as being easily really trickable is very much a repeated theme. For sure.
Sounds like everything.
Okay.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. It was so much fun to have you on.
Do we want to do a quick what we're currently reading before we sign off?
Yes.
Are you currently reading anything, Carrie?
Yes. Don't ask me what it is. Oh, no, I am actually in the middle of an advanced reader's copy of... You're going to have to give me a minute to look it up.
Okay.
Sarah, what are you currently reading? I'm currently reading a book called The Hike. And I may have to look up the author name, but it's basically... This guy is, like, going on a business trip, and he stops at a hotel for the night, and he decides, like, he's got a few hours before his, like, dinner meeting or whatever it is for with this whatever business meeting it is. And so he decides to go for a hike, because he likes to go hiking. So he's like, oh, I got, like, a couple hours, I'll go for a hike. And then he gets stuck, like, in the woods. All this bizarre stuff starts happening. Like, the first thing he comes across is, like, these men in, like, dog-faced masks that, like, chase him through the woods. And then he, like, finds a little house in the middle of the woods and is like, you gotta help me get back to town. I'm lost in the woods. And she's like, okay, I'll help you get to town, but first you gotta weed my garden. Or, like, and then, like, just, like, weird stuff like that. Like,
oh, my gosh.
Like, I don't know.
Sounds like a fun read, though.
It is. It's very fun, yeah.
I found the title of the one that I'm reading. I'm reading an advanced reader's copy of Tessa Miata Is No Hero. It's a middle grade book. It's from the conference that I went to pretty recently, but it's been a really fun read. It's about this Japanese-American girl who goes to Japan for the summer to live with her grandparents. She and her sisters go there, and she starts seeing this spirit.
Mm.
She refuses to acknowledge it. She says, no, I don't want to deal with this.
Smart.
Right?
The correct way to handle that. Just,
But she gets pulled into this whole saga involving the Japanese spirit world. She doesn't want to be a hero. She fails a lot of the tests along the way. It's an endearing read. It's really well-paced. I'm enjoying it a lot. It would be a fun one to pick up for anyone who enjoys middle grade young adult novels.
Nice. How about you, Leah?
I am actually currently almost finished with Scarlet by Marissa Meyer?
Marissa.
Yep. Marissa. Which is a retelling of A Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh, hey!
And it's the second book in the Lunar Chronicles, which the first book was Cinder, which was a retelling of Cinderella. And I really like the books. we had a conversation at the last book club about this. My problem with Scarlet is them using the alpha, beta, omega, pack mentality for wolves, for werewolves. And I'm like, that's not real. And I hate it.
but almost all werewolf fiction uses it.
I hate it. So that's the part that makes me the maddest. The rest of the story is great, but every time they bring up him and his wolf pack and he's the lone wolf, and I'm like, fuck you.
I hate it so much.
And he's an alpha and his brother's an omega, and I don't know what the fuck.
Alpha wolves are the oldest, usually mother and father pairing of the entire pack.
Yeah.
Totally debunked entirely by the author who originated that theory of wolf packs, and nobody seems to remember that part.
Yeah.
But it's such an easily memorable categorization. I hate to say that I get why it's stuck around, but I also do
I understand why it's stuck around.
I get why it's stuck around, but I just...
But also, we hate
that,
it.
The alpha in a pack,
it overly simplifies a lot of things.
The alpha in a wolf pack, if they were human, would be the mom friend who just has a fanny pack full of, like, electrolytes and bandages. And
oh my God, are
you okay? Come here. Let me fix that for you. And the alpha male of the pack would be, like, the dad friend who's, like, will, like, 10 out of 10 will punch a guy in the face, but also will give you piggyback rides if you hurt your ankle.
Right. Yep.
Like,
yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, he's not going to sit there and stare you down. He's going to be like, you good, bud? You want a snack? I got some granola in the car.
I want that werewolf story. I want that werewolf story so much.
I guess I have to publish my werewolf story at some point.
Yes!
Yes, you do, actually. Since we're on the book podcast.
Just have to be like, no, it's a family dynamic. They're all a family. It's a found family trope. Leave me alone.
Found family trope. I love it.
Also put out there that anyone else listening to this podcast who has a something that they've been writing should also take that step.
Yeah. You know what?
Put it out there.
There's so many places where you can publish your works online. Self-publishing has become a big thing recently. Mm-hmm. I would, as somebody who wants to publish stuff desperately, I would say save up some money and invest in an editor before you publish, though. Getting your stuff professionally edited, even if it's not like line editing, is such a good step to take. It'll improve the quality, it'll improve the sales, it'll improve everything about
editors do more than just proofreading.
Yep.
They're also making sure that your references make sense.
Yep.
They're making sure that you're using the same name every time.
Continuity. There's a lot.
They are checking a lot for you. So it is absolutely worth getting that extra set of eyes to look over it in a professional
But capacity. Like, honestly, the world needs stories. Like, we're humans. We need stories.
Yeah.
And they're, like, even if only one person reads something that you write, that one person needs to read that thing that you wrote. People need to read your stories. So, hey,
put them out there.
If you're working on something right now, you can do it. You can write it. This is amazing.
There are lots of avenues for getting it out there.
Right. Yeah. Well, this has been your motivational story.
On that lovely note.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And, oh, wait, did you do a currently reading? Or were you trying to ignore that?
I was trying to ignore that, because my answer is the same as the last time we had this conversation, which is, I don't have time to read right now because I'm working on an ARG for a friend of mine, and I am the lore master of the ARG, so I have been writing nonstop lore for this thing for, like, 2 months now.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yep.
I have written so many documents. I am so tired. But it's super fun. I guess if you are listening to this podcast right now, if you like interactive stories or ARGs and things like that.
What does ARG stand for, Hannah?
It's technically an alternate reality game, and it's basically like a mystery game that's played like in real life with NPC characters like online.
Okay.
So it's done through social media, Twitch, YouTube, Facebook, clues are everywhere, and people have to, like, actually go hunt them down to figure out the puzzles to unlock different parts of the game and things like that.
Okay. Like an online scavenger hunt.
Yeah, it's kind of like an online scavenger hunt with a underlying story.
Cool.
If you're interested in stuff like that, it's a need for Steve. is running it. Need number four, Steve. And it's been really fun, but it's just silly nonsense and takes up a lot of my time. Yeah.
Sorry.
So I haven't been reading.
No reading for Hannah. No reading.
Only write. Only write. No read.
Okay. All right, so I guess the third time's the charm here. We'll try to end the podcast.
Oh my god, let's just leave. We're done. Thanks for listening.
Just unplug all the microphones.
Just like mute. That's a callback because three is a magic number.
She's not wrong, folks.
Well, now I have to leave that in.
All right. That's how we can end this episode.
Three is the magic number.
You've been listening to The Word Warren on AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventures Underground at their online store or their virtual storefronts hosted by bookshop.org and libro.fm. Physical, digital, or audio, Adventures Underground has you covered. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/advunderground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows, and soon, many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.